Om sahana bhavatu, sahana punaktu, saha viryam karavavahai, tejasvinavatitamastu, ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om. Okay. Satsang. Any questions from anybody? Nella asked me one. I'll do that for starters. In chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita, verse 17, there's a past passive participle, tata. And in that verse, it says something like, the one by whom everything is pervaded, that the Atma, the Brahman, by whom everything is pervaded, that one is indestructible. So she was asking about this word, tata. Tata comes from, is a past passive participle, and it comes from the root tan. Tan means to spread out and pervade. Sometimes it's used as for a ritual, to know tea, like I'll spread out all of a ritual, all of the parts of a ritual is made, and then the ritual is performed. So it has that meaning, but also has the meaning of to spread out or pervade. And so when we say that by which everything is pervaded, in a way that has to be understood because it can have a dualistic sense, like space pervades the room, or space pervades the pot. And then you can make a distinction between the pervading, the subtly pervading space and the pot. So in that sense, when we use pervade, we always have to say what we really mean by that. And here in the commentary also, for that verse, chapter 2, verse 17, they talk a lot about the difference between sat and asat, satyam and mitya. What is satyam always pervades what is mitya, because mitya has no being of its own. So in that sense, wherever you experience mitya or any type of nama-rupa, since it itself has no being, the being which it enjoys cannot be away from it. Otherwise there would be non-being there. And so they can use the word tata, from the verbal root tan, dental na, dental ta, dental na, in the sense of pervasion. They also use propnoti, opnoti. Propnoti usually means to obtain, but they can use opnoti also for pervading, but you have to understand it in that context. Otherwise you can get kind of a dual sense from it. Hope that's clear, Nella.
Why is that so important?
Well, just because, so that it's important to understand how the language is being used, because any language that we use has its roots in duality. That's the problem. So even if we use a word like consciousness, it means I'm conscious of something. So consciousness will often be attribute some sort of a knowership, mm-hmm. you know? So. Yeah. Existence is always something attributed to the object itself, as though the existence is because the object is there. So it doesn't matter what we use, what word we use. If we use the word pervade, that also has a dual sense, because all of the language that we have is pointing to something that exists within duality. So almost every word that you use has to move from a dual sense to a non-dual sense, and that's that brought about by the proper handling of words in the whole teaching methodology. See what I mean? Otherwise, words can only, if you take the primary meaning of a word, it's only going to point to or indicate something that exists within duality, and we're using words to point to something which is the truth of duality, which is non-dual.
I see.
Yeah, so that's why when we say the Vedanta is a pramana, it is a pramana. The words are, it's a teaching tradition where the words are handled in such a way as to point to the truth of yourself, the non-dual truth of yourself. The only reason these words can do that
mm-hmm.
is because you are that non-dual truth. And so the words can be lectionous. They can actually indicate or point to something which is there to be recognized. And it can be recognized because it's self-evident. Self-evident means it doesn't need another pramana to come in and light it up. And just like the sun doesn't need another sun to come and light up the sun, the self is self-evident as conscious being. It doesn't need another conscious being to come in and light it up.
So we don't have any words that are specifically non-dual words. All words are
We don't
stuck.
Have not any non-dual words. Even the word non-dual is taken in a dual way.
Yeah.
And I give a class called Non-Dual Perspectives in Spiritual Counseling at CIS. And one of the first things in the class, I asked my students to just write down on a piece of paper their definition of non-dual, because it's a real buzzword.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the word how people will take the word non-dual to mean is that, for instance, we're both of the same opinion, or this is only one universe. It has many parts, but it's still one universe. Even if I were to say this is one universe, one without a second, that makes it non-dual. But then what I'm forgetting is that this so-called non-dual universe has many parts within it. And so it's not non-dual from the way that we're talking about non-dual. You know, so all of this has to be unfolded so that the mind of the student keeps falling back on a recognition of their own presence. Maitreya. Last week you spoke about how the jiva in the waking state is the Ishwara of the dream state, and something like that. The jiva itself is part of Ishwara of the waking state, and the Ishwara of the waking state is really only Brahman. Sounds like there are two. As if Ishwaras. Let me explain that. You don't have it quite right, but let me try to make it clearer. I was probably running too many things together there. Okay, so let's start with the first part. You see, we have take the jiva in the waking state, right? Then I am in this waking state. I wouldn't say that I, this jiva, this body, mind, sense organs, am the Ishwara of the waking state. Right? This jiva, this body, mind, sense organs, is part of the waking state. It's not the Ishwara of the waking state. But on the other hand, now say if I go to the dream state, then the dream is something that is subjective. It's pratibhasika. It's subjective. This body is objective. This body is part of Ishwara's creation. But the dream is my creation. It's subjective. And so when I have a dream, the whole dream comes from me along with all of the characters in the dream. So the dream comes from me, is sustained by me, and resolves into me. So I can say, I can use the dream to kind of show what it's like to be Ishwara, because from my standpoint, especially from the, once I'm awake and I'm looking back at the dream, unless I'm having a lucid dream, but now say from the waking state, I look at that dream and I recognize myself to be the whole dream. I don't have any doubts about that. I'm the whole dream and I'm every part of the dream. So I'm both the whole and the part. So say there's a part that I'm identified with in the dream, then I'm the dream character and I'm the whole dream. I can also say, I am every character that is in the dream and I'm the whole dream. See what I mean? And so the dream is kind of the Achilles heel for recognizing the body, mind, sense organs belonging to something greater than itself, because I have that experience in the dream. So I can say, I am the Ishwara of the dream. And it gives me an understanding, because if I say that, then I'm understanding that I am the whole and everything in it, and that the whole has only one self, one non-dual self. And now I say one non-dual self because the duality, say now just from the dream, the duality, subject-object duality, and also all of the nama-rupas that make up the dream, all of those are totally dependent upon my being. And when in fact I wake up from the dream, that the mithya of that duality becomes self-evident. That experience of duality, including the subject-object relationships and the part to the whole relationship, all of it, the whole dream, everything about it, when you wake up from it, that dream, it becomes unmanifest. And my being remains untouched. It's not like when the dream goes away, something has happened. In fact, nothing has happened. That's a very uncanny experience I have when I wake up from the dream. The whole duality is gone, and at the same time, nothing has happened because I'm the Satchit, the conscious being, which was the very clay of the pot, so to speak, the very being that dream was enjoying. And when the mithya dream goes away, there is no experience of loss or change or anything. So it's a little uncanny in that way. So we say, last week you spoke about how the jiva in the waking state is the Ishwara of the dream state. So the part I don't like about that, the jiva in the waking state, when the jiva, when the body, mind, sense organs goes to sleep and dreams, right? Then their relationship to that dream is one of being the Ishwara of the dream and of all of the individuals in the dream. Because the dream comes from you, is sustained by you, goes back into you. Where you, as the body, mind, sense organs, when you're in the waking state, you're not the Ishwara of the waking state. You know, you're a character within the waking state. So you belong, you're the body, mind, sense organs, there is part and parcel of Ishwara. But then what you have to realize, as you gain knowledge that the Ishwara itself is me. The Ishwara comes from me, is sustained by me, and resolves into me from the standpoint of me, the Atma. The Ishwara of the waking state is really only Brahman. The only thing that really is there for any state is only Brahman. So the Ishwara of the waking state is really only Brahman. Yes, and Brahman is yourself. Sounds like there are two as if Ishwaras. No, there's not two Ishwaras. There's only one Ishwara. There's only one self. The Jiva Srishti takes place within Ishwara Srishti, but the Jiva Srishti allows you to appreciate Ishwara Srishti. It can be used as an example to make you understand Ishwara Srishti. So can your imagination or your daydream. Say if you have a daydream, and in the daydream you're involved with your friends doing something or other. And then you wake up from that daydream, you know, and you realize all of that duality, all of that activity is mithya. So that's exactly... There's no way for us to establish that Ishwara has any greater reality than that. That's the whole especially chapter 2 of the Mandukya, is just focused on that, that you really cannot establish that this Ishwara Srishti has any more reality than the Jiva Srishti in reference to your being. In other words, both are mitya. So, hopefully that makes some sense.
So that reduces the creation to Ishwara's projection then, right? Or his...
Well, it's not that it reduces the creation. You understand the creation is mitya. Oh, yeah, I remember that, how the isness snaps back into amness. I love that, too. That really... That's a one. She says, Maitreya says, I love how you spoke about how the isness snaps back into amness upon waking from the dream. That's exactly right. That's really amazing. That's amazing. That we talked about that last week.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, I missed that.
Oh, I have it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's really a profound thing, because it's so experiential. It's just an experiential fact. You can relate to it, which is what I'm seeing, that you saw it in that way too. That's nice.
Questions? Well, when you get caught up in a projection or an imaginal world, in that case, how do you locate the dominance of your own being when you're lost in this some projection you have, some subjective projection?
So Edward's saying, how do you get back to yourself when you're lost in some sort of a subjective projection? And see, the thing is with that, is that it's true that when you're lost in that projection, your mind is just kind of off and running its own little movie, you know? It's having its own little movie. So Belinda says, great question, Edward. So you recognize it when you do.
I'm sorry, what?
You recognize it when you recognize it. In other words, if your mind is spinning off in some fantasy, at some point, often just because of your shravana and your exposure to this knowledge, you know, continual shravana manana nididhyasana. So your buddhi has this knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, when you're off on the little tangent that your mind is going on, your knowledge will come to the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's at that time that you bring your mind back.
Mm-hmm.
Because what can you do?
Yeah.
When it's almost like a psychosis. You know, your mind is lost in a dream.
Yeah, and that dream seems to linger, or that tangent lingers even when you bring yourself back to your knowledge. It comes back again.
What I think, so Edward's saying, yeah, but even when you bring your mind back, you're still kind of overwhelmed by the tangent, or the emotions, or the fears, or the worry.
Lingers.
If that's all lingering. What I feel with that, honestly, is as you spend more time with your knowledge, and it starts getting stronger. You know how in the Bhagavad Gita they talk, like if you build a big bonfire,
mm-hmm.
and at first you light the little corner of it?
Yeah.
And you have to keep protecting it?
Yeah.
The more shravana, more manana, more nididhyasana, because Because the winds of your imagination are much stronger than the bonfire.
Yes, that's right.
Right, and so that keeps overwhelming you.
Yeah.
Right. But there comes a time when the balance changes a little bit. And I would say that your vairagya changes. The vairagya means, sometimes we translate that as dispassion, but really there comes a time when there's a shift starts to take place more and more. You already have made that shift if you're a mumukshu, if you're a seeker, you want to gain this knowledge, that shift is always there, already there to some extent for sure. But it may not be strong enough to ward off all of your worries and concerns and the fantasies that that those engender, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So that there comes a time when your knowledge starts having more weight than your fantasy. And that brings also a lot of vairagya, because it gets down to is, I would rather be with myself and the fullness. And hi, Lucky, come here. What you doing?
Hi, Luck.
I would rather be with myself and the fullness of myself than get involved in all of this stuff, all of this worry. That's why I'm talking about that recognition of Ishwara, that Shraddha in Ishwara is also, say if you're thinking if Ishwara still is some god in heaven and who's hurt me in this way or that way, you can think of Ishwara in a different way. Ishwara as your infinite self, your infinite upadhi, the infinite upadhi, infinite knowledge, that knows a lot more about what's going on than you do.
That's
so
right.
You can relax into that, your infinite expression, instead of seeing yourself as the little person who's, you know,
suffers,
who suffers at the hands of Ishwara. But actually you are Ishwara yourself, you are Ishwara. There's nobody else here, and this body, mind, sense organs belongs to Ishwara. It's like my saying when I wake up from the dream, oh, that dream was so off, so mean to me. Your body, mind, sense organs are part and parcel of the dream. There's no me and the dream.
Yeah, I see where the me doesn't vary.
No. I'm talking about the me jiva in the dream.
Okay.
You're the whole dream.
Yeah.
Right.
But that me jiva is Ishwara.
Is part and parcel of Ishwara. And the self of the jiva is the self of Ishwara. There's only one self. But then the jiva, the dream character, is part of the dream story. The dream character is not creating the dream story.
Yeah.
The dream character is participating in the dream story. That's why in the meditation we were talking, you know, you can look at the world as kind of jiva srishti, that you're creating it. You're creating your experience. You're creating your story. Or you can respond to the story that is here. And I'm saying responding to the story that is here is a much different way of living than thinking that you are creating the story that is here. Mm. It's a totally different. So when you start realizing that actually you're responding to the story that is here, you know, then life becomes a lot easier. Huh, Lucky?
Mm-hmm.
Lucky's in class now and he's in rapt attention. What a good boy you are. You're a good guy. He's doing Shravana. But I love that. It simplifies your life so much just to be in the present. And see, it's not like you aren't busy in the present. There's all kinds of things that are being asked of you. But you're responding. And so you can just relax in what's being asked of you to do. And you do it to the best of your ability. Hi, David. I'm reading yours now. Oh. I will write all, I'll take care of that. I want to tell, I'll talk to Jackie about all of that. That's good. We're just...
What was the question?
No, just something about the website, because
oh,
I want
okay.
to be able to... Yeah, that's something different. I can definitely take care of that.
So is there a discernment between relaxing his story as opposed that I'm creating my own story? What is the difference there?
Well, the difference is between responding to the life that you have as the prarabdha unfolds.
Yes.
Or thinking that you are creating a prarabdha.
Yes.
That doesn't exist unless you create it.
Yes.
And that's a very stressful.
Yes.
As though it's an inert world. Rather than seeing this whole universe as one infinite expression of knowledge that comes from the truth of your being, you know, you see the universe as an inert mass, and you're the little conscious entity trying to create something out of it. I can't think of anything worse. Oh, okay, so Dunya is saying, can you speak more about appreciating the amness of objects rather than using the word is, using the word am? Yeah, and that's what I think Belinda had brought up a little earlier, what we did last week. Or Maitreya, I guess it was, that's right. What that is that there is only a verbal, in terms of words, just a verbal difference between the experience of amness and isness. There aren't two experiences there. I can't objectify and look at some isness, and I can't look at any amness either. So there's no objectifiable experience of amness or isness or arness. The amness, isness, arness are superimposed upon objects linguistically. I am, you are, it is, it's all. So the being is superimposed on these objects, and we have different words to denote that position. Like first person, second person, third person, singular, dual, plural, like that. But the experience, there is no objectifiable experience. So now let's just take the experience of isness in reference to me. Since I can't objectify it anyway, mm-hmm. I might as well just recognize it as myself, the non-objectifiable subject. I am. So in language I will say I am. Or I know it from my own being, my own amness. I don't really say I is. But actually, whether I say I am or I is or I are, these words are only referring to one non-objectifiable being. And so now say, just in order to make my mind appreciate my experience in a different way, focus on your amness, I am, okay? Realizing that being or existence is not something objectifiable as an object. So now, focusing just on the amness, which is really the nature of you, the subject, your own being, now look at all of the names and forms in the room, for instance, in reference, instead of saying, I am, it is, just keep the amness, and then let all of the names and forms that you see be related to that amness. Because there really is no there is no difference between amness and isness.
Yeah.
So in doing that, it's just a little twist. It's a little exercise where you bring the amness home to your own experience, because there is no other experience. There is no isness experience. There's no dual experience of being, because it's self-evident.
So this I am is equated to existence, what is.
Yeah. Whether you say I am, it is, you are, we are, there is no objectifiable experience of being. It's not an object.
Yeah.
It's the self-evident subject.
I can see that in myself as amness.
Right.
When I see a tree, it's a little harder to notice the amness of the tree. So you have to look at it from the perspective that it exists.
No.
And that existence.
Well, that's what everybody does.
Yeah.
But what I'm asking you to do something else.
Okay.
If you say that you can experience your own amness, like, you know what I mean when I say that, you can experience your own being, right?
Yeah.
And as amness.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm making you see there is no other experience of being other than your own amness.
Okay.
Because it's not objectifiable.
Okay.
So holding on to that amness.
Yes.
Then look at all of the names and forms within time and space in this room.
Yes.
Not changing the word amness to isness. So then you see all of this is enjoying only my being. Because you keep that word. Instead of, when you change the word, there's something happens psychologically. It says that when you change the word from amness to isness, then somehow it gets landed onto the objects as though it's externalized.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no externalized amness. It's not objectifiable.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying keep the word amness just as an experiment,
mm-hmm.
and look at all the names and forms. It's just it's a psychological trick almost.
Yeah.
Because language is so powerful in creating our reality. Did that help you, Dunya? Sort of. Yeah.
What'd you say?
Sort of. I know. You have to, it's actually experiential. You have to work with it and try it. I did it the last week in a meditation, and I think it worked well. Yeah, I've been trying. You've been trying it, yeah. Well, sometimes, I know Edward's always asked me this, but other people have also. It's like, how do I experience, how do I experience myself as Ishwara? What does that mean? How do I see all of this as me? And one way to start really playing with that, that views your experience differently, is to change the words that you use, because you don't actually have an experience of isness, you do have an experience of amness in terms of the words, you know? And so by changing the words, then you realize that the beingness of all of your experience, the sat-chit of all of your experience is me, and there's nothing away from that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you split your language up into am and is, then there's a duality that's brought about naturally by that split. So this can kind of put some ripples in that duality. That false duality can kind of start to make it crumble. In terms of your own self-experience. So Denya says, also, sometimes I try and play with objects being in consciousness or being consciousness itself. Yeah. Because there are no objects that are out of consciousness in terms of your experience as an individual. And to experience them as consciousness itself, I understand that also, because, you know, it's kind of also like the clay pot. You can't experience the pot away from the clay. It's not possible at all. And like that, there is no experience of any type of nama rupa away from the sat-chit of your being. And so just to bring that recognition to mind changes the way you're experiencing the world. Martina says, it's helping me to say amness. It's all happening in me and resting in the experience when saying it. Yeah, I know, that's right. It's all happening in me and resting in the experience when saying it. Yes, especially when your own being, the sat-chit, your own nature is... Your mind is resting in your own nature, which has been differentiated, you know? Then that becomes very clear. Anything else, anybody? Here's another question from Sue. Does Ajnani have to remind herself that no object exists independent of amness, or is this always known? You don't have to remind yourself if you're talking about it, you might be talking about it or thinking about it, but once that differentiation is clear, the satya mitya is clear, that recognition doesn't go away, even though you're not always thinking about it. So I would say it's always known, but you're not always thinking about it. You don't have to be thinking about it to know it because it's a fact. So sometimes you're thinking about the fact and sometimes you're not thinking about the fact. But the fact doesn't go away when you're not thinking about it.
So it doesn't become blurred or...
It doesn't become blurred or anything because it's a fact. When you have knowledge about something, the ignorance that had caused you to think of it in another way isn't there anymore. So you're not dependent on thinking about it because all of your thinking is rooted in that fact. That's what we mean by nishta. So Hal says, but the jnani may still need to bring herself back to the knowledge if emotions catch her. Yeah, that's right.
If what?
If emotions catch you.
Yeah.
Then you just bring your mind home. But even then, you know, even the emotions are catching you, but still you don't lose yourself. The emotions are doing what they do, and you can bring your mind back, but it's not like yourself has gone away or the emotions have become anything other than what they are, but they are there. And you may not exactly want to be wallowing in that emotional reality. So you bring your mind back. Does that make sense? You can say that what pulled you out in the first place? You know, and so that might be something you want to look at because something took you on a ride. But it doesn't really matter. The fact is something took you on a ride. If you want to work on what took you on that ride and if it's causing problems for you, then you can work on it and get to the source of it so that the next time it goes to take you on a ride like that, you already have kind of an auto-suggestion to pull your mind back a little bit more quickly. See what I mean? But it's not like you lose yourself when your mind is doing something or other. So Jagadish says, so by recognizing the jiva in all the universe as amness, the recognition of all that there is in the whole, the recognition of all that there is the whole, is more evident. I would say that all that there is the self. Usually when we say the word whole, we mean part to the whole. So if you mean like all that there is Ishvara, that's right. All that there is Ishvara, this body, mind, sense organs, and all experiences, nothing but Ishvara. But all of it, but Ishvara is, the truth of Ishvara is the self, you know? Brahman, the amness. That's why in the whole Mahavakya is I am Brahman. You can say I am Ishvara or I... You have to be able to say both. I am Ishvara, I am Brahman.
Tattvamasi.
Tattvamasi. So Virginia says, sometimes it seems that we have a desire for something that is not even known to us, but that seems to feel necessary for our happiness. Is that coming from our Prarabdha Karma? I think so. It's the Prarabdha Karma, you know, it pulls you in three ways. Either some people are pulling you in that direction, whatever that, some people need you or some situation pulls you into that direction, or the universe creates a situation for you and you find yourself in it, or a desire rises from underneath and you don't really even know why it's there, but it's there and you keep going after it because you do. You can't help it. So that doesn't matter. It doesn't necessarily mean that it'll have a happy end, that the desire will fulfill itself, but the desire itself takes you into a set of situations, you know? And you can say that's your prarabdha, because you didn't ask for that desire. It's almost like it's just the impetus for the movement of your life. So sometimes it seems that we have a desire for something that is not even known to us, but that seems to feel necessary for our happiness. Or even not necessary for, and you can say necessary for our happiness, necessary for life, it's something that I have to do. So Danya says, you are the whole, sometimes known as you are Ishwara, yes. But really you are not only Ishwara, because the truth of the whole and the truth of the jiva is Brahman. But see, the thing is, if you say you are Ishwara, that's assuming that you have an understanding of who Ishwara is. And Ishwara is Brahman with the Maya Upadhi. You know, so if to say I am, the good thing for Jnani to be able to say I am Ishwara, it means that the whole jiva upadhi is subsumed by Ishwara. The I am the whole means that all of this world that I'm experiencing is nothing but me. But if I say it's nothing but me, I can't mean that it's nothing but me, the jiva, because the jiva is part and parcel of Ishwara. So if I have to be said, all of this is me. That's why, like, that's why this exercise of being with your own amness. Then you recognize that the amness pervades the whole universe. So, but say, but really you are only Ishwara because the truth of the whole and the truth of the jiva is Brahman. Yes, but yes, that's true. But when you say you are really only Ishwara, because the truth of, yeah, what you're saying is that the jiva, the jiva is part and parcel of Ishwara, and Ishwara has for itself Brahman. So there's only one Brahman, right? The Atma is Brahman, and the whole creation is a manifestation of Brahman. It's the Maya Upadhi of Brahman. But Brahman is the Atma. Subsumed by Ishwara, I mean that recognition that there really is no jiva. The body, mind, sense organs belong to Ishwara. It's contained in Ishwara. And the self of that jiva upadhi is the self of the Ishwara upadhi, and in fact the jiva upadhi is part and parcel of the Ishwara upadhi, just like the wave is part of the ocean. It has no it's not separate from the ocean at all. It's part and parcel of the ocean. And everything about the jiva is part and parcel of Ishwara. And then ultimately the very self of the jiva is the self of Ishwara, vice versa. There's only one self. Atma is Brahman, Brahman is Atma. And so the jiva is actually given over to Ishwara. The jiva upadhi, right, is given over to Ishwara. Recognize that it's given over to what Ishwara, because it is Ishwara. That's the giving it over is as though you're giving Ishwara something, but you're just, you know, giving back what belongs to, giving back to Ishwara what belongs to Ishwara, what is already Ishwara. And then you recognize that your own being is the very being of Ishwara. There is no separate individual being.
And then where does moksha come into play in that?
Moksha is the recognition that myself is, nobody can do anything about the Satchidananda, my being, not even Ishwara. And that there is nothing but me, in truth. Nobody can. I seek myself in the world.
Mm.
I'm trying to become whole and complete, and I am that.
Mm.
So that I'm released of that superimposition, and I realize that I am what I seek, and nobody can take it away. Nobody can take away my freedom from me. I already am what I want to be, and nothing can be done about it. Not even Swamiji will say, not even Ishwara can take away myself.